accession number 27774, wheel 1.
Can you tell me when and where you were born?
I was born in Harbin. It's C-H-A-R-B-I-N, which is Manchuria at that time.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background and what you were doing in Harbin?
Well, I was born there, and I left Harbin, I think I was 8 years old, eight or nine.
And what were your father's? What was your father?
My father was a merchant who tried to build up a business there, and he was, I would say, import and export in a modest way. Yeah.
And what sort of business? What sort of things was he importing and exporting to Manchuria?
At that time, it was mainly English, in some English goods. They were canned goods. And what? I don't know exactly.
And what would he export? So he'd import English stuff, and what was he exporting from Manchuria?
No, they started investigating the egg trade as well, the shell egg trades, to export Chinese eggs, you know, into Europe. I mentioned that because then I will follow that up, because then.
Now, what was life like? Do you remember much about life in Manchuria?
Well, I remember, of course, very little. I know one thing is that we as children there, we never saw a restaurant that was all out of bounds down there, because it wasn't very clean. The Chinese, it was under Chinese rule, not very clean. And then there were always epidemics breaking out. For instance, when we walked in winter, sometimes the temperature was going down but nearly to minus 18 Celsius, and we had to rub grease into our face, you know, in order that it shouldn't split. And we sometimes had even to put masks on if there was cholera. So otherwise, life down there, as children, was all right. We had a Japanese nurse, and then we had a German governess there, which was very difficult to get on with as children, a German.
So life was pretty comfortable. Were there many Europeans?
Yes, there were many, you see, because that was the route where, for instance, the Czech army, and this escaped with the Trans-Siberian Railway into Europe. And all the white Russians, anti-communists, they escaped that route, going via Harbin, and then, because that was under Chinese rule, you understand. So there were a lot of foreigners in Harbin.
Now, where did your father originate from?
My father came from Latvia. He was born near Riga.
And your mother was Latvian as well?
No, my mother came from Russia, but she was born in Siberia.
So nothing particular happened. First 8 years, not governesses?
The only thing was that when the Japanese moved in, that was the first time, that we moved out very shortly. And
that
then my father had got a job through an English firm in Hamburg, and he went first, and then my mother and my two sisters, myself, were told that we would be going to Europe via Shanghai. And so we traveled from Harbin to Shanghai, which took about two and a half days. Because you had to stop the journey, and as sometimes, as we didn't use a sleeper, we slept in hotels and continued the journey to Shanghai. We stayed on 2 or 3 days in Shanghai, and then boarded a ship that was a half cargo and half passenger ship. It was a French ship, and it took us, I think, not quite sure, five weeks. When we landed, we docked all the time. Saigon was the first, Saigon, Singapore, Colombo, where we visited the zoo, Colombo, and then it was Djibouti, Suez Canal, and then through Corsica and Sardinia, later on in Europe, to Marseille. And that took a long time. Strange enough that in the army later on, I did it the other way around, via Cape Town.
Now, what happened when you got to Germany, to Hamburg?
Well, when I got to Germany, they put me into a German school where I stayed, the junior school, where I stayed about 4 years.
Now, what year did you travel to Germany? You were eight, that was...
Yeah, well, it was about eight or nine, yeah.
What year was that?
Ooh, in the 20s, that was. Well, if we can work it out. I'm 90 now, so...
Where did you settle in Hamburg itself? What was your accommodation like there?
Well, at first we stayed in a boarding house, you know, and then we moved into a very nice flat in a good district in Hamburg. But in the meantime, you see, my father was then occupied in the egg industry, and that was mainly from Shanghai, they were importing Chinese shell eggs mainly to Germany and England. I don't know.
And was this a successful business?
Well, it was very, very difficult business, because eggs in those times were not produced in batteries, but when it was very cold in Europe, the hens didn't lay eggs. So then one could sell the Chinese eggs at a comparatively cheap price. They used to call it in England, because my father said that Sainsbury's used to buy them, and they were penny eggs. It was called penny eggs. But it was very speculative. But as the business went on, they had very good business, so the firm where my father worked built a cold store in the free port of Hamburg with English capital. It was all invested on England. And it was the second largest cold store in Europe.
They can't see it, remember, sir.
And so he was then occupied as director of the cold store, plus supervising the trade of shell eggs.
So it was a success.
It was a success. It was a success, but the cold store, I must say that, was too large. They were too ambitious, so they had always difficulty in filling it, because I don't know and it was nearly made done for storing the eggs. And then they had difficulties, and I do remember as a child, they had to borrow money in England, and from the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, which is now very famous, HBC.
Now, how did you, you were of Latvian Russian background, you'd been living in Manchuria.
I had a Latvian passport.
So you were Latvian, yeah.
Now,
how did you settle down in Germany then, in Hamburg?
Well, I must say that I'm surprised. I hated German school. I hated that German school.
Well, tell me about that. What kind of an education did you get in Germany?
I got first a good education in in a prep school. Yeah. And there we started already English and French. And then I went to a high school in Hamburg, and I stayed there till I was 17, I think, 17, yeah. Now, there, of course, was the German education, Well, I hated it because it started already that the teacher started getting very Nazi and patriotic, you know, again, talking about always of the war of revenge, mainly the revenge against Poland, you know, already in started it.
Even in the 20s?
Well, it's, no, that was in the 30s. Well, for the 30s, yeah. For instance, I tell you, and our teacher who taught English and was prisoner in England, preached absolutely secret, more his war stories and militarism than I've met anybody. For instance, we had a German steel helmet on a cupboard, which more or less we had to salute and respect it. And I remember the boys played football with it once, you know, throwing it about, and that was not very welcome.
Now that sounds more militaristic and nationalistic rather than specifically Nazi, you know, although the two are linked.
Yeah, yeah, but,
I mean,
you're right.
It wasn't linked to Hitler at this stage then?
Well, it wasn't, yes, you're right. There was this because there was a Hitler paper which he wrote, that was the certain paper, just really a Nazi paper which he read. And then also there were signs, of course. It was forbidden to join, as a teacher, to join the Nazi party. But he had that thing which he said was under his lapel, that he has taken it away from somebody. You see, I'm telling you only this story. But it was then, I must say, otherwise, I liked it there.
So the education, the school was all right, you got on all right with the boys. It was the militaristic approach of some teachers.
Yes, I got on with the boys, and tell you the reason, because somehow I was always very good in sport. I started hockey and football in the school, and then also in tennis and table tennis, and I reached the first class standard in table tennis and in hockey. Actually, I played for Hamburg juniors, you know, Hamburg juniors, we would say, four times later on in later years when I was 17.
So you were just naturally good at sport?
I was good at sport, yeah, and that I was also good. You know that they recognized it when I was a recruit. I was appointed goalkeeper down there, and it was in West Riding. Yeah. Now, do you know when I surfed there?
So back to school, and so was the sport, did you play, I mean, was there a lot of organised sport? Was sport important within the school, would you say?
That school, yeah, well, I wouldn't say important, but you had opportunities to do a lot of gymnastics, you know.
Now, what about exams or qualifications?
I wasn't very good at school, not very good at school. So I must have reached, high level, I don't know. Just before you must, when you reach that, and you can go to university, that's that level.
What would be A level here now?
Before.
No, O levels.
Not quite all levels, I didn't reach, not quite all levels, but just in between. Yeah.
Did you have any particular favourite subjects or subjects you hated, or was it just you weren't very interested in school?
I don't know, I must think. No, I was always good in school in German language, English language. Otherwise, but I must say, I wasn't very interested.
So you were interested in languages, but not much else?
Languages, and languages, geography too. Yeah. And then, of course, I was always interested also in history. Yeah.
Oh, so you had quite a range.
Yeah, well.
Now, what year did you leave school then?
I left school then. Wait a moment, 33.
That seems about right, 1933.
Yeah, just a moment, no, 32. Yes, about right. Yeah, I just wanted 30 because I had a job that was 31 or 32 I left school.
That's near enough. And what were you going to do? Were you going to go and work for your father? Or what was planned for you?
It was very difficult to plan for me because I didn't want to stay in Germany, you know. And then somehow my father got an agency for me in Hamburg.
Now, why didn't you want to stay in Germany?
Because the atmosphere started getting very bad in Germany. You know, that is...
Was your family Jewish?
Well, no. Partially, yeah.
Partially, right. Yeah.
And... But we didn't have the Jewish religion. I was brought up completely different, in a different way. Yeah.
How much Jewish would you say? I mean, was it a grandparent or one of your parents?
Yes, that is correct.
And did you feel threatened as a partially Jewish? Not religion, yeah. But just, you know...
No, I must say I was never threatened. But I stayed. We stayed in Germany till... I left Germany in and out in 1938.
So that's
I was still there in 39.
Right. Now, so what were you going to do? You wanted to leave Germany, but you didn't. So what did you do? What job did you get? Your father got you an agency,
well, an agency, but I wasn't very successful.
Now, an agency doing what?
That was to pull for... For a poultry firm to sell poultry, which often came then from Russia, you see. But it was as usual when you had something from Russia, very erratic.
They had you were selling Russian poultry?
Selling
Russian
at a small offer. Yeah. Not only Russian, but poultry, frozen, yeah? Frozen poultry, because that fitted in, we had cheap, the was a cold store, yeah. But not very successful, you see. Not, I mean,
was the supply erratic or the
very the supply was it stopped suddenly? It stopped. Russia was always they had supplies and then they stopped suddenly. Stopped. That was the regime there.
What about the quality?
The quality was very low, very very low. You could never really rely on.
So it made it difficult to sell on a regular basis.
Yes, very difficult.
So how long did you do that from? About 1932 to.
Oh, you know, I forgot to say that I went in 1933, I went as an apprentice to a German egg firm and stayed there a year.
Tell me about that then. Hmm? What is there to learn about eggs? You know, I mean, I know that sounds silly, but apprentice, what were you learning?
There's quite a lot actually to learn. You see, for instance, you have also to have the knowledge how to... Eggs are being candled by hand in night time, where you put it against a lamp and see whether they are fresh. Nowadays it's all done by machines, but we had to candle the eggs and then pack them into cases. Yeah. And the Chinese eggs were imported in rice husks as preservation. That was
on a bed of rice husks.
Yes, the rice husk, which was very cheap, and there it preserved the eggs. That is what they discovered.
But it wasn't your father's business.
You were no, it was a 100% German business. And
why didn't he just take you on in his own business, or did he want you to stand on your own 2 feet?
No, but there was all. But in the meantime, I was also once. Twice in England, and I wanted to go. Always wanted to go to England.
Now, why did you go to England?
Just more or less, I see. Just not on a holiday because my father welcomed it because he worked for an English firm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what were your first impressions? What of your first visit to England?
I actually went to England by boat from Hamburg. Which was loaded with eggs, which belonged half to the firm. That's why I went there. Well, I liked it in England. I stayed in Bayswater, in a boarding house down there, for I think it was 25 shillings a week. It's very bad food. And I liked it. I stayed about 4 or 5 months. You know?
And how good was your English by then? I mean, it's perfect now, but how good was it then?
Perfect it isn't, but...
good enough.
Yeah, well, good, yes. Well, it was... I could... Yes, I was quite good. I could... I mean, I could talk. I joined a hockey club. Yeah. Oh, that was later, sorry.
It's all right. So, but you came back to England quite a few times in the 30s.
Twice, yes. Oh, yes, I forgot to mention that in the meantime, when I was 20, I had to go for military service in Latvia. They had conscription. That was in...
So that was in 1934?
Not 24, no...
34. So we just looked up your thing, and it would be 1934 was you when you started, because you were 20. And
yes, yes.
Now, how did you come to have to be called up? Because can you tell us the background to that?
Well, I had a Latvian passport which expired at that time, and I had to report to the consul in Hamburg, and he told me that I have to go.
There was no choice.
There was no choice.
If you wanted to keep your Latvian passport.
That is correct, yeah.
Now, where were you called up to go?
Well, I went to Riga and saw the consul there. And then somehow and he gave me, I think, the papers to call on a certain regiment in Latvia, certainly machine gun company.
Now, was that at Riga as well?
In Riga, yes, yes.
Do you know the number of the machine gun company? Or the name
no,
of the
that
regiment?
I don't know, but I know the machine gun was a Vickers Armstrong machine gun.
But you don't know its number?
How do you mean?
The regiment.
No.
Because you know regiments have numbers or names.
No, that I don't remember.
No,
but I don't remember the machine gun. It was a water cooled.
I'll come to that, don't worry. So this machine gun company was at Riga. Was it in any particular named barracks or camp? Or was it just Riga?
It was just outside Riga.
Now, what happened when you first reported to the unit?
The difficulty, my difficulty was that I hardly could speak Latvian. Can you imagine that? I had a few lessons in before I went, but I could hardly speak. So my language, what I could speak fluently, was Russian and German. Russian was hated there, and German, they didn't speak much.
So how did you manage from the start?
I don't know myself. I was in a machine gun company, and...
Well, how did they receive you? What happened when you first arrived? How did they treat you, kit you out and get you ready?
They thought I'm very strange, yeah? And... First, because we had also Latvians who couldn't read or write, so they sent me to a lesson there where they had the ABC, you know, but it lasted only 2 days, then I was dismissed. But I must say I learned a bit. I studied at night. I was allowed to keep the light on. They gave me books, and slowly, but I never spoke it really well. Slowly I managed, but I was very, very unfortunate there. I had very nice officers there.
Hang on. But what did they kit you out with?
Oh.
You know when you get kitted out in the army, what was the kind of uniform you got?
I didn't like it at all.
Why not? Tell us why not.
Well, first of all, you didn't wear socks there. You were wrapping your feet in warm, which is quite complicated.
Fatigue.
Because of the frost. Yeah. And... You had a simple uniform, which I don't think we looked very smart. And then the hair had to be very short, absolutely very short. That was the main thing. You looked like a prisoner, really.
And you were put into this machine gun company?
Yes, training, yeah. Well, we had this Vickers Armstrong machine gun.
Tell us about your training on the Vickers, because we're, you know, the Vickers is the same as in the British Army. Tell us about it.
Well, it's water cooled and it fires when you really think today against the German on 250 bullets a second. 250 bullets a minute, which is today not, today it's 900 to 1,000 bullets a minute, yeah? But, and then we had Ross Enfield rifles.
Now, tell us about the Vickers first. I mean, yeah. What training did you get? What were you doing on the machine gun team?
Well, we had their training. First of all, this Vickers machine gun was divided into three parts. The men who loaded it, and then the men who actually operated it, and there an assistant who was holding the this. And we had practice on targets.
And would you practice at each one of these roles? So you'd take a go at each thing? Or were you set as a...
You had to do each role, and also because the tripod you had to carry separately on your shoulders. So you had to run with a tripod, which is quite heavy, on and put it into position, and then they came with the other lot. Yeah.
And what did you think of the Vickers? Was it a good machine? I mean, you thought it was slow compared to now, but what did you think of it then?
I didn't have a clue whether it was slow or not.
That's what I mean. Then,
now in this war, when I heard the German machine gun, which they were called Spandau, which rattled in between, so the English machine gun, I don't know, was also slower, not as powerful as the German machine gun.
But what did you think of it at the time? It seemed all right at the time.
You see, at the time I thought that the stoppages were too frequent, you see, the stoppages, and they say there were too many faults, so we had to learn really how to avoid it, which was very difficult. And can you imagine embarrassing if you have a stoppage, then go and repair it, because the bat sometimes, you know, and they were old machine, and don't forget, they were all from England. And they exported not their best equipment.
So it's from the First World War, probably.
That is First World War, yes. And the rifles as well.
Now, what other training did you have? You mentioned the Ross rifle, did you?
Yes, there was the Ross Enfield. Ross Enfield.
Tell me about rifle training. What was that like?
Well, that was fairly easy. I mean, the target shooting, mainly target shooting. And you got marks for it. Yeah. I was better with a rifle than with a machine gun. Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I couldn't cope very well with that thing. I could run and bring it, but I was not so good. I could target, but I couldn't really, because we had sometimes to disassemble it, you know, and then assemble it. And there I was not good at.
But you weren't a bad shot with a rifle.
I was good with a rifle.
What do you think made you such a good shot with a rifle then?
My eyes were good and nerves were good as young men. That was all. But I didn't like it. It was spoiled, and that is often you read in books, to a horrendous sergeant major.